you could break it down into four different categories of business development work. One is writing, of course, speaking, posting to leverage all of that content, and networking, getting out there and meeting people.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer. I hope you are well and having a fabulous day. You know, look, here in Chicago, we are struggling through our finishing touches of our lovely winters that we have here, but you're not here for the weather report. You're here to learn about growing your book of business and being that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. And as you know, I always try to bring on interesting guests, and today's no different. And before I get into the weeds with Hillard a little bit, who you're going to meet soon, I just want to take a second to thank our sponsors, Legalese Marketing and MoneyPenny, both of them helping me and helping lawyers across this great land to improve their businesses. MoneyPenny with their live chat on the website and their virtual reception, and Legalese with their website, with your social media, your newsletter, your Lawmatics training, you know, just about anything you need to help grow your law practice, Legalese steps in and does it. They are awesome. And Hillard was kind enough to send me his favorite quote, which is maybe more, you know, powerful now with what's going on in Russia and everything. But when you're going through hell, keep going. And that's a Winston Churchill quote. So Hillard, welcome to the show. We're talking to Hillard Sterling. Why that quote?
Why that quote? Because I firmly believe it. I've lived it. There is nothing more valuable in life than perseverance, because hell does end. At some point in time, it may seem like it won't and can't, but it will and it does. But it won't if you stop fighting.
Okay.
And I believe that it applies very squarely to our profession, but it also applies to life outside of the office for me. And I think it's a general theme that I always latch onto, and it gives me great strength. And it always proves itself correct, because at some point in time, it may be years, but at some point in time, the crisis ends and you come out stronger.
Yeah. And we've all been through things. People that have listened to my podcast or read my books know, you know, some of the things I've been through in my life. And look, I'm very fortunate to have a wonderful career and passion for that and my family. And if anybody follows me on Facebook, it's caught a big old pike in the Des Plaines River with my son this past, you know, week. So, you know, we have a lot to be grateful for, but when things get tough, you know, we definitely have to persevere and get through it. Do you have a specific thing that happened in your life that you persevered for, other than sure. what we're going to talk about in a minute with your guitar playing?
Well, yes, looking forward to that. But yeah, I could give two examples that come to top of mind in the legal profession in my career. One was when I was a young associate. I was with Kirkland & Ellis, and this was pretty much right out of law school. I was with another firm called Arnold & Porter before that, but I went to Kirkland in DC, and then I transferred to Chicago, and I was on a team. I won't name names and be too specific, but let me just say that I was working solidly 18 to 20 hours a day, and that may sound like an exaggeration. Sadly, wow. It's not.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I would get pulled into trials where I was responsible for churning through, and at that time, it was all boxes of documents, and doing it endlessly, thanklessly, with zero appreciation and nothing that was immediate on the horizon that was a relief. So I kept fighting through that. I got through those experiences, and I just came out not just a better lawyer, but a better person, knowing that I could fight through that. And the other professional adversity that I faced was when I started my own firm. I had left the law practice and started my own, hung up my shingle. And that was really tough work. And you have your own gig going, Steve. You know how tough it is. And I know a lot of our listeners know the challenges you face when you have no support. Yeah. And things start collapsing. And the only thing paying your checks is the client, billable hours and the checks that come in from that. And I was facing a lot of challenges at that time in my personal life as well. So it was one of those instances, Steve, where it really took a couple of years for me to get to a point where I started to feel comfortable again, professionally and personally. But
yeah,
that time frame was one of the most difficult, not a lot of sleep during those years. And I drew on Churchill's quote quite frequently, and it got me through it. And when I emerged and came out the other side, I realized that really, if you follow that proverb and you never stop fighting, you can defeat anything. There is no challenge that is too significant, too overwhelming to overcome.
And so, let's keep going, though, Hillard, into your current role at Clawson and as a technology lawyer. How did you transition from your own firm to getting back into the legal space with a firm?
Yeah, I was facing those challenges, and I actually had a wonderful opportunity come in through my best friend with whom I went to law school way back in the late 80s, who knew somebody in New York who had a law firm, and he was the managing partner of the firm, and they wanted to open a Chicago office. And that was music to my ears, because
it was a natural at the time, right?
It absolutely was. But it also was very challenging. And there wasn't that much of a difference between opening a satellite office in a city and building it from scratch as compared with what I just went through building my own firm. So, but coming out of that experience, I had the tolerance, the significant work ethic to fight those hours, fight through those days, fight through those weeks and months. And I was able to build this office from scratch to being a functional, pretty productive office in the firm. So that was a wonderful accomplishment to get back into the law firm space. And for me, it was a lot better because, as you and a lot of our listeners know, when you're doing your own thing, not only do you have to do the substantive work, you got to do the process too. And that is extremely distracting, if not overwhelming, and sometimes a dispositive issue when you're really trying to serve clients and also do all the administrative stuff that goes with a law practice. So getting back into that world helped, but it still was that challenge. And then moving back into normal law firms where, and I say normal in the sense that I'm joining an office, I didn't have to build an office. And it made that practice, made me appreciate that format a lot more, because now I had people who could help me. I had paralegals who could do a lot of the difficult day-to-day work. I had, you know, the mailroom and the copy people to help me prepare exhibits for trials and do all of the work that goes along with a litigation practice. So that was my transition back into the general, typical law firm world. But I'm glad I went through the process of really building things from scratch, because again, it made me a lot stronger as a lawyer and as a person.
And I think today too, for people that are going out on their own, and there's a lot of lawyers doing that, it's so much easier than it used to be, in the sense of there's virtual assistants, there's virtual paralegals, there's a lot of options and opportunity for offshore and local assistants, so that you can delegate the administrative, delegate the marketing, even delegate some of the legal work and paralegal work. So you're not working those huge hours. But you know, we had to claw through things, right? 80s and 90s, it's a different time, for better or for worse. So now let's talk a little bit about, you know, your rainmaking prowess, because I think part of building a firm on your own or building an office isn't just about doing the work, it's about getting the work. So what has kind of been some of the things that you have focused on as a way to develop great clients and keep the lights on?
Great question. And it goes to the heart and soul of developing business as an attorney. And I really think you could break it down into four different categories of business development work. One is writing, of course, speaking, posting to leverage all of that content, and networking, getting out there, meeting people. So each one of those has its place. I know you counsel your clients in all of those different areas, but you have to have all those plates spinning at the same time. You can't neglect one for the other. And in fact, they build and depend on each other. So for example, you know, get out there and write articles and client alerts. And one thing I learned early in my career when I first started marketing is to give things away. Tell people information that is immediately useful for them, so that they have a takeaway, they have a tangible value from what you're writing or speaking or posting. but just give them enough so they know how much they really need you to do the rest. So giving things away was a big thing in the dot-com era when we were hitting the late 90s, and that's when I really started marketing and building my own practice. And giving things away there was something I used in my practice and I still use today. So I want to give people value without having to hire me, so they know they need to hire me to build on that.
You know, I think what we're hitting on too is four key areas that we can break down further. And that's what I think I'd like to take things is just let's focus on a couple of tips on writing and how that breaks down speaking, posting, and networking. And I think if we have some shared ideas on those four things, that's going to be super helpful to the people that maybe aren't doing anything, or maybe that are only doing one of those four prongs and not getting quite where they need to go because they're not able to give away something or repurpose something or leverage it the right way. So when mm-hmm. we think about writing, and yes, that's a giveaway in the sense you're not getting paid to write, right? You're not writing and someone's paying you $1 million to write an article, right? These are mm-hmm. these are things that we're doing for brand building and for to build that, not only educating people, but also to build your brand, build as an expert, right? The thought leadership. So what's something about writing that you did, whether how you published it or how you leveraged that writing piece or pieces to get that your brand built or actually get business in the door?
One of the first pieces I wrote, and again, I'm in the litigation technology space. So one of the first articles I wrote was how to litigate a technology case. And it played to lawyers, but it also played for me to clients because they saw that I was giving practical tips to focus in a strategic yet aggressive way to defend these technology companies. So I wrote an article all about how to defend technology companies when they're sued and what to focus on in the contracts, what to focus on in discovery. And that led to a bunch of other offshoot projects where I was giving tangible tips. And I like tangible tips, practical tips. Here are the five things you need to do
like actionable stuff, not just 20,000 yes. feet. Like step one, do this. Step two, do that, right?
Yes. No one wants to read a law review article unless you're a lawyer and you really need to understand the background of law. But even then, typically, you're not going to read and rely on a piece by another lawyer. You're going to go to a treatise, a compilation of cases, those kinds of resources. So absolutely, Steve, don't just tell people what the law says. Tell them what they need to do.
And you also mentioned, I think, that you published this in the law review. Is that the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, or where'd you publish?
Yeah, this was actually a practice journal that was in D.C. at the time.
Okay.
When I wrote this piece. And so it was by the American Bar Association. So, but I took excerpts from that, and I would publish it in different trade associations and trade groups and technology groups. And then I would go and speak about those issues. So I think this is something I'm sure you counsel your clients in the marketing space. Build on your content. Put something together that's the foundation, but then use that in so many different ways and get out there in the community. And again, tell people what they need to do to succeed in the area. The five tips, the three tips. I like, you know, nice, good numbers like 3, 5, or 10, but tell them something that's a value that they take away.
Legalese Marketing is not your traditional marketing vendor. Instead, we're a true fractional CMO that helps you save time and spend your money the right way to build the practice of your dreams. We help through the entire process, from customizing your intake system to driving leads and even getting more reviews afterwards. Schedule your free call at legalesemarketing.com.
Hi, I'm Steph from Moneypenny. We're trusted by leading law firms and attorneys to answer calls virtually, professionally, and brilliantly. Our high-tech receptionist service enables us to route calls to your teams wherever they're working, and even recognize and prioritize calls based on whether they're a repeat caller, a new client, or a VIP. Claim your exclusive partner rates and free trial by quoting FRETSIN today.
And I want to hit on one other point. When you publish for the Law Bulletin, a journal, the State Bar, whatever it is that you're publishing, that's getting out in a different way in the sense of it's online, it's on paper, whatever it might be. You can then take your article and then repurpose that in your blog, on your website.
Yes.
You can put it in a newsletter. You can repurpose it for speaking. So breaking things down and then repurpose, leverage, harness. Don't throw something up on your website blog that no one's ever going to read and let it go. Try to get it published somewhere people will read it and then repurpose after that.
No doubt about it. You've got to be aggressive. No one's going to come to you if you just put something up there and you hope people read it. They never will. And they certainly won't act on it. They need to see you as the expert. So that's why speaking, going to the next area of marketing and development that we all use here in the law, but I've used very successfully because I've really enjoyed that process of speaking. And you have to. You have to, because it goes to that equation that we know in Provisors, which many of your listeners know about, but it's a formula that works, and it's know, like, trust, and refer. Okay, KLTR is the acronym, which used to be the name of Provisors, as you know, before it started. Mm-hmm. LTR. So KLTR is a great formula because it applies to all of these different areas, speaking, writing, posting, and networking, but it applies to everything I believe in our professional existence, because no one's going to hire you unless they know, like, and trust you.
Yeah.
And that's where the referrals come in. That's when the contacts come in. So how do people know, like, and trust you? They see you. They interact with you. So you've got to get out there and speak. You've got to get out there and mix and mingle. You've got to get out there and network in that other area as well.
I'm going to add a little color to that too. I would also just suggest get out there and speak, but I would try to focus on trying to speak not with your competitors so much, but with audiences that can either refer you or audiences that could actually use your assistance directly. So for example, if I speak at a title company, it's to their lawyers that they're adding value for. So I'm in a room potentially full of prospective clients in the sense of real estate lawyers. That's a great audience versus me speaking at a coaches conference for lawyer coaches. And now I'm basically educating all of my competitors. And I know that can still be valuable if 1 out of 100 or 2 out of 100 says, oh, you know, I want to come work for you, or I want to, you know, I've got conflict work. But can you speak to that a little bit too, like finding the right audience, Hillard?
Key point, Steve. Thank you. Yes, you really have to find an audience that are potential buyers, right? So you need people who are going to get value from your points that aren't going to use them to compete against you. So I'll give a couple examples in my litigation area where I focus on technology space. One group I like to speak in front of is a group called Claims Litigation Management. Claims Litigation Management is an insurance defense group that's filled with insurance carriers, and they are a great prime audience for me because those are my clients. Those are the people who give me cases. I get a lot of my defense cases from insurance companies whose technology insurance gets sued. So CLM is a place, it's a strategic opportunity with the right audience. I'll speak to on a monthly basis to a group that is of chief information security officers called the CISO Executive Network. And these are, again, my prospective clients. Many have turned into actual clients. These are people who day to day have to deal with technology issues in their companies, and to be in front of them and to give them tangible tips and advice is invaluable. And it's been a wonderful opportunity to speak to an audience that really is a bunch of buyers and not just other lawyers who are going to go back to their offices and either use what you said or not, but it's not going to get you business. So
I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you do anything at the end of the presentation or anything to try to, I don't want to say the word like hook them in, but something where there's a reason for them to follow up with you with questions or a reason for them to talk with you again after the presentation?
Absolutely. It's critical. Follow-up is as important as the event itself. I'll follow up with the attendees by shooting an article of interest on a topic that they discussed during the meeting. Perhaps it's something that I have written, or if not, just a timely headline that will show them the importance of taking care of those legal responsibilities that I was discussing. Yeah. With CLM, I'll follow up with the different attendees, again, with some good content that I put together, or just to, you know, a LinkedIn connection at a bare minimum. You have to do that just to say, hey, I know you were there, and I hope you got some value from my information, and let's stay in touch. So without following up, everything fades away, as you know. And I know, again, that's part of your business, Steve, is getting people to make sure they don't just do something and then walk away because that dissipates.
It's super frustrating too when you're a lawyer and you've been presenting to a certain association or group for maybe for years and you've never really gotten anything out of it. And the time that you put into it to prepare and show up and do it and all of that, it adds up and you're not billable for that. So, you know, I think to your point, finding the right audience, having a presentation that's going to be engaging on a topic that's relevant to the audience and the group, and then having some way of having a next step, a follow-up, so that you're not just leaving it open and just, geez, I hope somebody calls me from that group. Well, no, be proactive to email the folks and answer questions and maybe even schedule some meetings if they have an interest in learning more about what you do as an attorney in technology or whatever space you're in that you're speaking about.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Steve, because you want to get in front of these people. Following up is fine, but it's not enough if you're just doing it electronically or with an email or with a LinkedIn connection. How many LinkedIn connections do people have that they really go through it when they're looking for a lawyer? That's not the value. The value is getting in front of these people again. I'd love to find a few key participants in those meetings and schedule a dinner or lunch or a happy hour or put them on an invitation list for a webinar that you're planning and you want to put on, and then reach out to them individually, personally, with an invitation to follow up on that, to build on what you've already conveyed to them. But the best ones are the lunches, the happy hours, the dinners, the breakfast, whatever it is, face to face. There's no substitute for that.
We're gonna come back to that in a minute, Hillard, because I know we're talking about networking as our sort of fourth prong of our discussion. So we've got writing and developing that content, that thought leadership, speaking thought leadership, getting in front of your audience, getting in front of the buyers, getting in front of people who can refer you, having a good process for following up. And the other thing about speaking and writing that's gonna segue right into the next point that you made of the four prongs is hosting. So what are you, if you're not doing anything and you've got nothing to say, nothing to educate, nothing going on, it makes it very challenging to post content on LinkedIn, post content online. So talk to the posting and why that's an important element and how it works together in tangent with the other two prongs we just spoke about.
Sure. You know, I'll focus on LinkedIn because that's really the preeminent site of posting and context for all of us in our professional lives. And that's a great forum. It's turned into a bunch of business cards out there and an electronic Rolodex of sorts to really a content valuable resource for people. And a lot of people are getting information from that. So posting can be some content that you created, either a client alert or an article, could be a part of a presentation that you gave, but post something that's a headline and just post that as well. Some headline that's in your area that you believe your potential clients should know and be sensitive about and care about. Put that on there. It posts once every few days. You know, there are some people maybe who overpost perhaps because you don't want to annoy people, of course. But if someone's going on LinkedIn, they're opening themselves up to that. So it's much more risky to underpost than it is to overpost. Do something once every few days at least. It stays on the radar. That post may not be the reason you get hired, but the fact that you're on their radar, you're top of mind and you're present, that is going to get them to know, like, and trust you. So that posting the content to maximize the value of what you've already done or take something from the outside world and post that, it's so important to stay in front of these people.
But think about it like a beginning, middle, and end of a story, right? So like I'm going to be speaking at a title company coming up in a month or a week or whatever. I can post that I'm going to be presenting at this group and I'm excited about it. I can post while I'm or right after I present, and then I can post after and talk about what the results were, what the questions were, something interesting from that.
Yes.
Also your articles, you could break your articles. If it's five takeaways, you could break that into five separate posts.
Yes.
Say, you know, so now you're getting five posts out of an article that you wrote. Now you've got between that and the speaking, you know, maybe 8 to 10 posts that could pop up in a month that you normally wouldn't have.
Great points. And it gets to this theme of working smart rather than working hard.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of this stuff can be, it's all about repurposing and educating. I'm not a big, there's some self-promotion that's going to happen. You know, when you do something, you speak or put a book out or put an article, there's some self-promotion. But at the end of the day, most of what you want to put out is for the benefit and the good of the industry, for the benefit and good of the people that are reading it, not about how's it going to help me sell this or help me close that.
Yes, no doubt about it. There's so many values, so many layers to it. But if you're not posting, you're missing the value of what you're doing. You're not getting the bang for the buck.
Yeah.
And I said, work smart, not hard. You probably don't have to write a lot more than you already are to be a more effective marketer and business developer. You don't have to necessarily write a bunch of presentations that you haven't done already. It's using what you've already created and, yeah, perhaps creating some additional content, but it's really how you use it and how you focus it and target it.
Yep.
Where you're going to get the real value. And it's about being strategic. Call it strategic aggressiveness.
There you go. And let's roll into our last point. And we've got a few minutes to cover this before we wrap up, Hillard. And that's networking, which you and I are both, you know, provisor group leaders. I started in your group, Chicago 9, opened up the North Shore. And so we're both like in really good, you know, positions of, I don't want to say authority, but like where we're sort of like in charge and being a leader, I think is, you know, there's some benefit to that and how we get to know our members and how we add value in their lives. And so, but networking, you know, break it down. Like what is one or two things that you've been doing in networking that has really made the difference for you in your career and how you brought in business?
This will sound familiar because it's similar to the approach for writing and speaking and posting. And that is making sure that you are front and center with these people that you're around and networking with. So first of all, they know what you do. But second, and perhaps even more important, they know you as a person. You know, sincerity and authenticity is so key. And I've been associated with a lot of networking groups where you didn't do that. You would go to large cocktail hours, for example, and hand out business cards. And at the end of the day, you come home with, you know, 30 more cards and you put them in a big stack or perhaps you put them in your contacts. Not really valuable. When you're in a networking group, the best ones, and Provisors is a terrific example of that, are groups where you meet regularly, both during the meetings and after, and you get to know each other. Know, like, and trust again. It goes down to that. So for me, the value of Provisors or any networking group is being a person with them, letting them know who you are. And it may be something that's unusual. For me, a lot of people may be a little concerned about going out and telling everyone how much you love the band Rush.
And yeah, I'll shout it from the rooftops, well, man. Steve, I love Rush.
You're a kindred spirit. You are. But a lot of people be like, what? What's wrong with this guy? But if you don't care and you're proud of it and you carry it and you show people what you really are, what you love to do, what you love to listen to, what you do outside of the office, that's the real value. No one is going to necessarily hire you because you're the best lawyer. They're going to hire you because they like you and they think, oh, you're going to do a great job for me. But also, I'd like to hang out with you.
Yeah.
And that to me is client development at its best. Developing a client and actually developing a relationship and maybe even a friend.
Yeah. So we've got four prongs. We've got writing to create content, build that thought leadership, speaking similarly, how we're posting to get that content out and also to just make sure we're staying top of mind with people. And then lastly, it's the face-to-face, the networking, the building relationships, being able to be authentic with people in your network and developing really good referral sources is that's at the heart of what helps business development get across the finish line. And quite frankly, you don't have to join the golf club and you don't have to spend a ton on sports and taking people to games. I think that those days have kind of come and gone. I'm not saying they don't work and people still do them, but, you know, and I love being invited, by the way. I'm not just putting that out there. Like if you have a skybox, like my friend Ken Levinson, I'm there. Like, what do you know, I'll show up? But at the end of the day, I think it's about that, you know, not only the personal connection, but how are you then stepping up and being a giver and adding value for others? And again, the goal is that there's some reciprocation so that you guys can partner in a true way.
Yes.
So wrap up that, you know, the networking piece and how these four work together. And then we're going to move on to discussing, your favorite book.
That's awesome. Well, let's, before we get to the heart of the matter, this whole COVID era really has brought opportunities for us, right? And I'm a firm believer. One of my other favorite proverbs, which is from ancient Eastern proverb, which is so true, and that is that every crisis is an opportunity. And COVID is certainly no exception with that, because it has created new ways for us to get together that are very easy and, quite frankly, just about free.
Yeah.
That is a great way to follow up, to network with people, to do the follow-ups after speaking, to get together with somebody who you may have gotten in contact with on LinkedIn and just say, hey, do you have 20 minutes? Let's jump on a Zoom call. And when you do that, I know we're all kind of Zoomed out, but if you're judicious about it and you're careful about picking your spots, you could really make a great connection with someone who you've never met before on Zoom by having one of these conversations. I've made a lot of friends I never would have met without COVID.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love face-to-face, and I was in the city for the ABA Tech show recently, and just like the pressing flesh, the eyes, the smiles, the people I met, you can't discount how powerful that is. However, the Zoom has opened up the country, the world to people and how they do business. And I don't think it's ever going to go back. And I have no interest in jumping on a plane to go meet somebody that I can get on and, you know, for a 30-minute call in Atlanta or, you know, Nebraska, whatever, and talk shop. And it's not a substitute, but it's good.
Yes, no doubt about it. And it's here to stay. Let's all use it.
Yeah.
Hey,
Hillard, real quick before we wrap up and we got to get going, but I've got a new segment and I didn't really prepare you for this, so I apologize, called Game Changing Books. Is there a book, a business book in particular that you've read that you recall that really laid it out? If you mention mine, that's okay too. But otherwise, you know, if there are business books that you, any one that stands out?
Yeah, it's a great question. Aside from your book, Steve, I would have to go to a non-business book, actually.
Okay.
Because it's a story it ties a lot of these points together, because it also touches Rush, because it was written by Rush's drummer, now deceased, Neil Peart, who wrote a book called Ghostwriter. Mm. And the book is all about perseverance and fighting through challenges. Neil Peart's had some terrible tragedies in his life. His daughter was killed in a car accident. His wife died of cancer within the next year. And he wrote this book, Ghostwriter, about his healing, his recovery from that. And to me, that's as strong business advice as it is personal advice. It's about how he got on the road to find healing.
Yeah.
And how he did that and the agony that he went through to get to a point where he actually felt happy again. And, you know, at the end, you know, he emerged, he came out the other side, and that resonated with me for the reasons we were talking about earlier in the podcast. We all go through these challenges. We all go through moments that are calamities. Or
it's,
at
like
least,
it's like we've come full circle from where we started with Winston Churchill to Neil Peart.
Yes, exactly. And I think they both, if they're both up there in heaven together, I have the feeling they're sipping some good whiskey and smoking some cigars and finding a lot in common.
Yeah.
Because that's what Peart was all about. And quite frankly, you know, I love Rush's music, but Rush's words, which were all written by Peart, have that philosophy of fighting, never quitting, finding yourself, being yourself, honoring yourself, and appreciating your own individuality. And those themes run throughout everything we talked about today, and I think everything we do in our offices and outside.
Just a beautiful artist and collaborator on that, in that group. And I'm, like you, a huge fan. I just can't play any of their music. Listen, if people want to get in touch with you to learn more about your practice, about you and what you're doing in technology, what's the best way for them to reach you there, Hillard?
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Anybody would like to reach out, please do. My email is my first initial H and then Sterling at Clausen.com, Clausen.com. Just send me an email. Connect me on LinkedIn. Look me up, because there aren't a lot of Hillard Sterlings.
Now, that's not the most popular name in the world.
You probably don't even have to search for Sterling. Just LLARD, throw it in there. Connect with me on LinkedIn or call 312-606-7747. 606-7747. That's my direct line. I'd love to meet the people who listen to your podcast, Steve, because we're all like-minded. We're all kindred spirits at some level or another. Because these people get it. They're out there trying to reach people. And that's what I love to do. And I'd love to reach some of your listeners if they would reach out to me.
Yeah, you've definitely reached my listeners. I mean, the people listening right now are hopefully taking notes and thinking about all the things that we shared today and how they can start leveraging, you know, those four prongs that we talked about in marketing to, you know, continue to build that thought leadership and build the practice. So just thanks so much for sharing your wisdom, being my friend, being a leader with me and Provisors. I know we haven't spent as much time together as I'd like to, but maybe this summer will open that up for us and we can hang out and have some more beers and listen to some Rush.
I can't wait, Steve. And I'm going to hold you to that. Okay. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure knowing you and I look forward to great times ahead. So thank you so much.
More to come.
The opportunity. Thanks, Hillard.
Thank you. Hey, thanks everybody for being a listener, for, you know, putting me on your speed dial on your phone to listen to this show, Be That Lawyer. Listen, share it with a friend. You know, let's keep the momentum going. We're doing great. And I'd like to continue to, you know, bring on great guests like Hillard to share their secret sauce. So, you know, continue to be that lawyer, someone who's competent, organized, a skilled rainmaker. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Be well.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, fretson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.